Hi, welcome to the Friedberg conference call. I'm David Rothberg. Sorry we're a minute late. With me is Al Friedberg. Good morning, Al. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, David. Well.
Good. In respect of Eddie Rod, today is the 31st of October. We've got a lot to cover today. Al, for the first time in a while, we have a new portfolio. We haven't had a chance to talk about a new portfolio for the last several conference calls. Before we get to it, I think we should begin by starting by talking about the old portfolio. The old portfolio was like an old friend, and eventually we had to abandon it, and we abandoned it with a great deal of disappointment because it caused us a lot of despair. Can we talk about what, in respect of the quarterly report, what we did with housing, what we did with Brazil, what we did with Greek banks, those being the major constituents of the portfolio that held our attention for, I really can't recall, it must be about six quarters now.
David, did you have to remind me?
I apologize.
Okay. Housing. That was our big position, very big position. We had a lot invested in it, a lot of energy, a lot of mental energy, and you might even say emotional energy when you stay with a position that long.
Yeah.
The truth is that the builders were not reacting fast enough, and for many technical reasons, probably lack of labor, lack of lots to develop, or not enough lots to develop, so they weren't reacting fast enough. That caused prices to rise faster than desirable. They really were rising something like about 0.5% a month for a number of years, and eventually put out of range a lot of buyers. So it wasn't so much the mortgage rate increases, which also helped a little bit, but it was mostly the fact that house prices were getting out of sight. And so this became sort of visible sometime in perhaps in March, February, March. We were a little late in spotting that, I have to say. But sometime in the second half of the year, we began to liquidate the portfolio, actually ended up liquidating the entire portfolio at good prices compared to where they are today. Actually, market is probably 20% lower than where we liquidated, but we still have some hope that we will be back to that market. I believe that the fundamentals remain extremely strong. There is a very large pent-up demand built. There are very few houses built in the past 10 years, and I believe that the equation will result in much better results for these companies, which are still showing, incidentally, good profits, and they're still and from a valuation point of view, they're extremely attractive. So I believe that we will be back to them. Not sure when. I think that it would be best for these home builders to be able to straighten their cost structure. I mean, lumber prices, for instance, have come down a great deal, which is good. Some material prices have come down, and I believe that a little bit of an ease in the labor market can help, and that may happen too. So at some point, we'll come back to it, but we did exit that position. Brazil, we exited a good part of the position, but we kept we primarily kept Itaú, the Itaú Bank, which is probably maybe the largest private bank in the country, did very well with it from the second to the third quarter. And then just before the election, not wanting to take a chance that who will end up winning, we sold the rest of the position. Market after the election did a little bit better, but since then it has come back to levels where at which we liquidated. Again, this is another area where I want to come back to. Bolsonaro looks market friendly. He's been talking about some profound changes to the economy. He wants to do some privatizations. We're not sure how many, but he does want to repair or solve the pension problem. And he's even looking at solutions like the Chilean model, the private Social Security model. And he's got a very competent finance guy from University of Chicago, who is very keen in reducing the role of the state. And so I think that Brazil could position itself for another good move in the next couple of years. So we'll come back to that probably as soon as the current uncertainty is over. We call it the emerging market uncertainty.
Can we move quickly to Greece?
In Greece, we reduced the position, basically reduced the position in half. We still have the other half, still cheap, very, very cheap, compellingly cheap, and we think that that position that we still have today is significant enough that if prices go to where we think they will go, they will make a large impact in the portfolio.
Okay, I'd like to just, from an investor's point of view, ask you to speak a bit about how you feel as a portfolio manager about having to abandon a position into which you'd invested so much psychological energy and so much of your own financial resources. It's a terrible disappointment. It's not so much a lesson, I suppose, but what is it that How do you as a portfolio manager deal with that, and how would you manage the portfolio going forward so that doesn't happen again? Or is it something that is unavoidable given the style of portfolio management that you practice? Can you speak about that a bit?
Okay, the size of the position was very large. At one point we had as much as a position equal to about 150% of our equity. So that means that 1.5 times the capital of the fund was invested in the housing sector. It was a very concentrated position, and I think it's the largest position we had. So that small percentage changes in that market would make a difference. Fortunately, I say, a lot of that position was by way of options, and so call options. And because of that, it as the market came off, our exposure dropped rapidly. And so it went from 150 to 120 to 90% of equity fairly quickly. And by the time we liquidated, it was somewhere between 80 and 90%. So would I do that again? I think I would. But of course, we probably would have to calibrate it a little bit better. Because we were almost, I would say, blinded by our fundamental position, fundamental bullish position, we did not react fast enough to the market being marked down and going against us. As I say, fortunately, we had it built by way of options, and I think that that's very good because that gave us an automatic exit, and it softened the blow a great deal. So, yes, I would do it again. I would probably have to rethink a little bit about the calibration, about the sizing of the position. And I think I would, again, if I want to have such a large position, I would have to do it by way of options.
You know, I had a bit of an agenda in asking that question because what I was trying to lead you to was a conversation that the two of us had at the nadir of that position, where you told me that really, in the final analysis, what we really depend upon is creativity, and that when we have a good idea, we really want to step into that idea, and that is really our strength, and that's where we want to continue to be. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's true, and that's why we like to concentrate positions. And if we feel good about it, we'll take a large position. I mean, it could be a bullish position, it could be a bearish position, but we want to make a difference. And I think that if our position is right, it should do very, very well for the portfolio.
Okay, thanks. Let's move now to the present, which, as I say, is for the first time a little bit different than the past. And it's not just the portfolio that's different, but it's the character of the market that's different as well. And a great deal of drama during this past month, the correction of 10% in the S&P, many names are down 30% from the highs, and globally, we have many markets that are fading. The current portfolio is very different, and for those of you who don't know, we're ahead about 10% so far this quarter. 10%, we're going to probably finish October somewhere in the neighborhood of plus 10%. And the portfolio is now, I'd say, fairly biased towards, I don't know if it's tilted largely to the short side, but we have some very healthy short positions. Can we speak about those, Al?
Okay. Some of them are not such new positions. For example, we already had established a position that we were short China or China equities back in the previous quarter. So some of the positions were there before, and they have done well. They've done well through the last few months, and so that we still have those positions. We are short primarily real estate developers and a few second line financial companies. Also an old position is our Chinese yuan bet. Again, mostly by way of, let's say half and half, an outright short position on the yuan and some put options on the yuan or dollar calls. We've had this for a number of months, and it's working up well. Actually, the Chinese, I think the market is beginning to see that the Chinese have very little options left but to allow the currency to depreciate. Unfortunately, first of all, the currency is fixed against a basket of currencies. We don't know exactly the composition of the basket, but we know that it contains the typical baskets that make up a trade-weighted index. So it has done a little bit, it's been a little bit weaker than the typical basket, which means that they have not engineered a devaluation, nor have they allowed the depreciation to go unchecked. And as a result, by the way, they earned how should I call it, the description that they didn't manipulate the currency. Okay, the U.S. government concluded they didn't manipulate the currency, and that's true. Actually, if anything, they have tried to contain the selling forces. I don't think that it is the right thing for them to do. I think that in the state of what their economy is, very weak, the economy today in China, that they're probably better off with a weaker currency than it is presently, and so they should allow it to depreciate. But I guess there's some political reasons for them not to let it get out of hand. So, but that's an old position, and that's doing well, and I believe that will continue to do well for months to come. The Greek position remains, as I said before, or part of the Greek position long remains, and also we are carrying over a short position in Australian banks. This is also sort of an older position, and it's only recently begun to do well, and we think it's going to do extremely well. So,
Al, before we elaborate on the Australian banks, let me just interject for a second. For the benefit of listeners, what we're talking about now is the Global Macro Fund, and I should have made this clear. Of course, we're managing two funds, and the Asset Allocation Fund does not have short positions. It is dealing with the current environment by being long bonds, and we'll discuss that in a moment. But at the beginning, we're going to finish off with the Global Macro portfolio, and Al, sorry to interrupt, let's go back to the Australian banks.
Yeah, you're right. Correct. So yes, Australian banks, and that position is old, and is, as I say now, it's starting to do well for us. So the only thing that really changed is that after we got out, and maybe it's a result of our what happened to us with home builders. To us, the home builder fiasco was a sort of like a canary in the coal mine. It was telling us that there is something happening in the economy that is slowing it down, and that and maybe they were the first victims of that slowdown. Maybe that's what it was, but it alerted us to that possibility, and maybe even the lack of, in the other sectors, it said to us that maybe they're in trouble, and so we, because of that, we bought. People may call it protection, but it wasn't protection. Actually, it was an outright position. We bought put options on the NASDAQ, and that gave us what you might want to call a short profile. The portfolio became then really short because of that, because as the market went down, that position got larger. So originally, it was a small position, delta adjusted was very small and became larger as the market went down. So that's worked out well, and we still have this position. There were short-term options, and they're out-of-the-money options, and so they lose value very rapidly. We have taken some profits, expect to take more if we can. That depends on whether this is just a correction, the correction is over, or whether the correction continues, or we are into a full-fledged bear market, which we still don't have enough clarity about. So that's, I think, the one single difference between the previous quarter and this quarter.
Is the put options on the NASDAQ?
Yes, that is the single different the addition to the position, because the other position that we're carried on from before,
right.
Carried over from before, and right. And the longs were liquidated before, so that's the only real difference.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about how you would look for the distinction between a correction and a bear market. And I'd also like to talk about whether or not the canary that was the housing was predicting a recession. But before we do that, I think that the Brazil banks, the Australian banks deserve a little bit more attention. Those Australian banks are the bet there is that they are overexposed to real estate and they don't have an NAHB behind them to guarantee those loans. Is that really the thrust of the
right?
Argument?
There's no government guarantee in those loans. And their portfolios are loaded with these mortgage loans. A lot of the loans were made interest-only mortgages. We used to have them in the U.S. Until the authorities recently told them that they can't do that anymore. But it's also built on the fact that the real estate market in Australia, like it's mostly around the world, has been very strong. A lot of it driven by this credit, the ease of money. And so now as the market starts topping, it looks like the real estate market in Australia is beginning to go down. It's been going down now for a good part of half a year, maybe more. It's going to put some pressure on the portfolios, and depends how far down it goes. These banks can suffer substantial losses like the U.S. banks did maybe in 2008 and 9. Interestingly, they pay out Australian banks, and this is, of course, one of the reasons why it's difficult to go short, because they pay very high dividends. But in essence, they're paying out a very large proportion of their profits, maybe 90% or more of their profits on the average. And that also means that should things turn down, they will start cutting dividends. And this is our bet that they will do that, and the prices will go down even further.
So we have both a potential weakness on the asset side, that say the real estate, and also a potential significant weakness on the side of the actual security, on the banking side.
Right, right. Also, to note is that the Australian dollar is weak, and it's been weak, very weak, and that the central bank sees that as a form of monetary ease, and so it's difficult for them to come to the aid of the economy by reducing interest rates substantially, because already the Australian dollar is very weak, and that can have some impact on inflation. So we think that they are in a bit of a box at the moment, and so what we expect is real estate prices to continue to go down and put pressure on those portfolios.
Okay, let's come back to correction, bear market, recession. This is really the issue now. The discourse onto why the correction has been so severe is that markets are predicting are rolling over leading indicators many leading indicators. I'm thinking in particular PMIs are starting to roll over globally, and to some extent the United States on the manufacturing side, not on the service side. And I think that investors are predicting that a slowing economy predicts, of course, then lower earnings, and that's what we're seeing now. Is it a recession? Is it a bear market? Is it a correction? How do you know? How do you play it?
That's a very hard question. The first thing is that nobody really knows for sure why this market has come down now. There are many reasons given. You know, we talk about trade concerns. We talk about the Fed getting let's say tighter, raising interest rates and looking like they will continue to do that to what they call normalizing interest rates. We talk about many different things, but there's not one single factor that one can point to and say this is it. A lot of the good economists that we follow and say that the recession is years away, that there are no signs of a recession. That's probably true. There's no science at the moment. The one thing that I have continuously harped on in for the last few years is the economy is very vulnerable. The global economy is very vulnerable. And it's vulnerable because we have increased debt a great deal. In order to achieve the growth that we had, in order to achieve the consumption increases that we have had, we've done it by way of indebting ourselves. Governments and individuals and corporations have actually taken on a lot of debt. So it's extremely, extremely vulnerable to any setback. And this is what makes it dangerous, because a small recession, a very small recession, or a squeeze in profits, where profits, not a recession, but where profits now go down significantly, 20, 30, 40%, because labor costs have increased, because pricing power is weak. A decrease in profits can bring on a more severe impact, can have a much more severe impact on the economy because we are so heavily indebted. High yields compressed tremendously against AAAs and against treasuries. They've started to widen. So now the thing is, if fear comes into the market and whatever the sell-off is, whatever the reason is for the sell-off, that can actually trigger something much worse. And the reason it can trigger it is because we are so indebted. So it's very difficult. I always use the example of 1929. The market crashed in 1929, and at the time that it crashed, there was no recession in sight. The market crash itself is what brought on more fear and then a generalized run on banks and so on. So it's sort of the market preceded and caused the recession, in my mind. You know, there's been a big argument about this, but in my mind, it's the market that did that, the market that triggered it. That's what we have to worry about. We don't have to worry so much about the economy itself. We can't treat the economy as something independent. The economy is now dependent on markets. And if markets get unruly and wild and violent and the declines are sharp and fear begins to pervade, it will have a tremendous impact on the economy, and many, many, many thousands of debtors will begin to default because they can't roll over their debt. And you know that almost 50% of bonds being issued recently are below investment quality, and there's an enormous amount of those kind of bonds outstanding. And also there's a lot of leveraged loans to companies with very, very poor covenants, to companies with not great cash flow. So small changes in the markets can have a chain reaction. And this is what's more important than trying to predict and look ahead. Is there a recession? Is a recession coming? A recession may not come, but we can cause a recession to come if markets continue to get very, very weak.
So in this case, this is really, you're really vindicating the view that it's not news that makes the market, but in this case, it's really the market that's going to make the news.
Precisely. That's right. It. That's in this case, that's what it is. We're sitting on top of a very, very vulnerable situation, and small impact from let's say from a way of having fear, not being able to roll over credit. That can have devastating impact on the economy.
So this is from an economist's point of view, but from a portfolio manager's point of view, we have to make a call, and there's a certain timing factor here. And your timing was good in this instance. Maybe the question as to how you would respond if the market were to prove itself to be a fairly short correction, a correction which may already be over, might be found or might be gleaned by asking what led you to think that the markets were about to turn down in the first place. Like, why did you put on those puts on the NASDAQ?
Yes, it's a lot of it is technical. Today we are navigating based on technical factors. As I said before, there are no fundamental factors that we can point to. And it may be that there are no fundamental factors at all, and it's just simple, plain fear that something will happen. And this fear that something will happen will actually cause the event to happen. So the only thing we can navigate by is technical instruments. And the instruments that we look at as are breadth of the market. We want to see how broad the market advance or decline is. We want to see what's happening at the individual level, how many stocks are making multi-month low or one-year lows or two-year lows. What percentage of stocks are doing that, telling us that there is some problem, in this particular problem in this company. And if there's many of them like doing that, then that's a problem. We're looking at volume. We want to see whether upside volume is strong compared to downside volume. There's a lot of technical and psychological factors that we are looking at. And I can't even say that there is one that's more important than the other. So far, I've not seen signs of a bottom, but we may get them in a day or two or three days. So that's all I can say. And the position that will have the most impact, on which timing is so important, is on these options. These options have a short life. They expire at the end of December.
Right.
They expire at the end of January.
Right.
They're out of the money, so they depreciate rapidly. You have to manage them well. That's difficult to do. I have to admit that's difficult to do. And they lose value. They lose value very rapidly. And unless you're a momentum player, you can be involved in these. So that's probably the only thing that will make a big difference. I don't think now if I stop discussing the U.S. market and I say, okay, well, but what about the Chinese stocks? Well, I think China is in a very difficult economic position, and I believe that the Chinese economy will continue to implode. And I believe that the real estate companies many of them will go bankrupt. So I have no problem with that position. I have no problem with the Australian position. I think that we're in the early stages of losses, real estate losses. So I have no problem with the Chinese currency position, because I believe that the Chinese currency position the Chinese yuan should continue to depreciate as much as even the U.S. dollar should continue to increase. Right? That's giving us a bit of support too. So those things there is not a big difference to those things. Now the question is, what's our exposure, and we have to manage what's our exposure on the short side of the market via these options. As far as the asset allocation fund, where we can't go short and we don't leverage. The way I thought of being, let's call it, take a defensive position was by way of buying treasuries, 10-year treasuries, and we also bought longer treasuries too, 20, 30-year treasuries. The ultras? Yeah. And my rationale was simply that a very weak, let's put it this way. If the economy continues strong and the Fed continues to raise rates and nothing happens untoward in the financial markets, those bonds will probably go down a little bit, and we may move towards maybe 3.5% or 3.75% on the 10-year from 3.10. That may happen, and so we won't make any money. We'll probably lose a little bit of money on those bonds. The other side of it is that A, something is happening in the financial markets. B, there is very little growth in money and credit in the U.S. at the moment. So that says, and commodity prices also have been very well behaved. They don't go up. They've been down, and to me, it's telling me that there is no real inflation problem in the U.S. And it's very possible that in the next 6 months or 12 months that we'll see a core inflation go down to below 1%. That speaks well for bonds. That speaks very well for the 10-year and the long bond, the 20-30-year bond.
Well, to play the devil's advocate to that, though, we've had a bond market. We had a very big short position in bonds, as reported by the CFTC. We have very low inflation numbers, and we have commodities rolling over and an equity market that collapsed. One would have expected that the bond market would have rallied more than it did. It hardly moved over the past week and a half.
Yeah, but, you know, it depends. It's a matter of timing. Really, it's a matter of timing. It may be that another 5% in the market will make it. Right now, the market believes, and I think that it's true, that the Fed intends to raise interest rates. And we're very close, the 2 years is very close to the 10-year, which means that the yield curve is very, very narrow, is moving towards flat. So the market is saying that if the Fed continues to raise rates, the economy is still good. Likely is that the long rates will continue to move up a little bit. I think that's a general sentiment. And I believe that that is incorrect. I think that given the present credit and money situation that we have today, that we are not going to be able to sustain easily rates of 350 on the 10-year.
Moving to commodities. Commodities, as you say, have rolled over, and yet you have commodity positions in oil and in gold, and both of them are from the long side. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, we bought the oil. At the moment, we've been liquidating some of it. It's we probably made a little bit of money in it, but some of our models were showing that there's still some upside there. Now I'm beginning to think that if the market stays weak, the general sentiment will turn. The general sentiment is turning against it. The idea being that China is weak and economies around the world are weak, and so oil consumption should be weak. They're not acting well at this moment. You know, the market has gone from backwardation to contango. In some instances, truly in the U.S., the international market, we're long the Brent, which is the international market. So it's not looking as good. So we probably are going to be liquidating the position. We did liquidate some of it in the recent days. The gold position that we bought was bought when gold was around 1180. We did it by way of long-term options, so it doesn't really affect us too much. Our exposure to gold is maybe 10% of the portfolio. It has a dynamics that if the gold were to go higher, then the position would get larger automatically.
On a delta-adjusted basis.
Yeah, but what I noticed in the past few weeks is that gold goes up when the market goes down. So it seems to be almost like a bet on the market. I don't know whether it should be that way, but that's what it is recently.
And in the asset allocation fund, your gold position is largely expressed through equities.
Half and half. Gold mining stocks and gold bullion, half and half. Yes.
Now, you've drawn a bit of a distinction between the bullion and the securities. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, yeah, the mining companies have done better in recent months, in recent years. They've consolidated. They went through a horrible period in which they wasted money in acquisitions and whatever else, in exploration, and they wasted a lot of money. But recently, they've done much better. They have trimmed their costs. They have consolidated, and these companies today can make money at these levels. And I think that they have a double upside, right? One of them is if gold goes up, they have an upside, and also if gold doesn't go up but stays relatively well contained around this level, 1200, they should do. Well, there's a case to be made that many of these gold companies will merge and to achieve greater economies of scale. And so there is a consolidation play there besides a price bet.
You're thinking about the Barrick purchase 2 months ago.
Yeah, the larger companies are trying to acquire smaller companies. It is cheaper to acquire companies on exchange than it is to find gold today. Exploration is very expensive, and even when you do find reserves, you have a lot of problems with the authorities. You have environmental problems and other problems that make it difficult to get the gold out of the ground. It may take as much as 10 years to get gold out of the ground if you succeed. So I think that they're beginning to look at the idea of buying companies that already have reserves, and that and hopefully they're permitted. Those reserves are permitted means that they have permits to develop them, and there are such companies, and I think that that makes sense for the big companies to do that, to buy them. It's a lot cheaper.
When you think of when we talk about gold, in the back, I think of everyone's mind is the issue of inflation. We've talked about commodities rolling over, and I know that that's a large that's a big proxy for you for inflation. But coming back to or uniting our talk about the gold with the 10-year yields holding fairly steady in the wake of a really collapsing equity market, is it possible that those yields are worried are some kind of signifiers of anxiety of stagflation? Is it possible that the 30-year TIPS broke out last month from 1% to 1.25%? I'm reading here from a question that was just emailed to me from a client. Do you think that stagflation is a concern? Do you think that have you got any comment on TIPS?
Real rates are very low still today. I mean, 1.25% is very low, right? I mean, I remember not long ago, I mean, what, 20 years ago, 1998, 1999, real rates were like 3-4%. So 1.25% is nothing. And in fact, 1.25% for real rates is bullish for equities, on the basis of this equity risk premium. If you can buy stocks on the whole, if you can buy stocks that have an earnings yield of 6 or 7 or 8%, and your competition is TIPS, and TIPS are 1.25%, I think that you have to, for the long term, buy equities. So there is a strong reason to buy equities in the long run. So I don't really know that the TIPS are showing anything. I do think that if inflation, which I believe it's possible, very possible, the inflation will show a downtrend. Core inflation will show a downturn over the next 12 months. That you'll see real yields go up a little bit more. But the reason why real yields went up now is, number one, they were very low, very, very low, unnaturally low, and affected by what the Fed did for many years. And they're normalizing. So I don't think we should read too much into them.
Okay. All right. Normally, we try and keep a call down to 45 minutes, and I thought with the with a new portfolio to discuss that we might go beyond that. And I was kind of prepared for that, but we've exhausted ourselves, and we actually end up finishing 5 minutes early. So I thank you for the time, and on behalf of all the investors, I wish you good luck for the coming quarter. I remind investors that our listeners that this call will be posted on the Friedberg website and on the Niagara website sometime in the next hour or so. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to get back to me. I'm David Rothberg at niagaracapital.ca, and of course, you can get in touch with your Friedberg representative as well. Thanks for your time today. Thanks again, Al.
Okay, thank you, David. Thank you. Have a good
You're
day.
welcome.